Morning again. We'll start in just a moment here. We can shut all these doors, please. And we'll pray in just a minute. Well, Heavenly Father, we just thank you today for another opportunity to worship. It's an absolute blessing to gather on a Sunday morning and to hear your word, to be in fellowship with other believers, other people who love Christ, prize him as a treasure, as a king, and to be edified. This is a time that builds all of us up. So we just pray it does. Just pray that as we gather and as we hear from Ephesians 4, that we would do what it says. We would obey the words that are commanded of us, that we would speak the truth in love. I just pray again, Lord, for the need here. There is always a need to speak the truth in love. I know that there's people in this room now. I don't know who they are or what they need, but there are needs. There are always needs to go and to speak. And not to correct, not to rebuke and speak harshly, but again, to speak in tenderness about what's true, to offer the very words of Christ, to offer the spirit of, I will not crush you, I will not snuff you out, but I do want you to know something. And maybe that something is about you, and maybe it's about me. There's some people here that need to invite more honesty into their lives, more accountability, more openness, more responsibility, and they need others to know about it. And so God, we just pray for these things, because you say that to speak the truth in love is to build up the church. That's what we want. We just pray you'd help us to do it. We just commit our time to you now. We just tell you we love you. In Christ's name we pray. Amen. So last week we talked about some principles related to reconciliation. And we'll talk more about that today. So specifically last week about what it looks like to hear correction well. How can you be ready to hear the truth? And this week, I want to talk about the best way to offer correction to someone else. I want to talk about how to speak the truth in love. What I want to share with you this morning has taken me 11 years to learn. And I'm still learning it. I'm not perfect by far. I fail in this constantly. But in my opinion, there are definitely some best practices for how to do this, for how to speak the truth in love. And my hope, again, same as last week, is to give you some very practical thoughts, things that you can leave with and apply on Monday morning. So many of you know me as someone who is very direct. I first came to New Life in the fall of 2015, and I think I rather immediately started correcting other people. Which in hindsight is very cringeworthy to me. I regret a lot of things about that. So here I am. I am a brand new Christian. I am pointing out failure and weakness in everyone else. I assumed maturity about myself that I did not have. And I think I had 6 conversations in 6 months. Yeah, one a month. I was correcting and rebuking people left, right, and center. I was breathing fire anywhere I could. And I know that I hurt some relationships. And I personally, I remember being really surprised. Oh my goodness. I felt like, wait a second, I'm telling the truth. And so why was it hurting someone else? If I'm right, no one should be hurt. So I had genuine shock. I was truly shocked. And so I was telling the truth, at least I think I was, but it wasn't in love. And I didn't understand that at the time. I wanted to be loving, of course, we all do, but I didn't know how to do it well. And the impact of that, the impact of failing in this, it shook me to my core. It made me really distrust myself. So I swung the pendulum pretty far from one direction to the other. Here I am, I'm very willing to confront, very willing to speak my mind. I'm being harsh, I'm being blunt. And then I failed like dramatically, drastically. And I swing to the other side. And here I am now. I've been hurt, and now I'm not willing to confront. There's lots of fear of man in me. I am very, very careful with my words. And I don't want to rock the boat. I don't want to hurt the relationship. So I'm going to stay quiet. And I stayed on the other side of that pendulum for probably about 5 years after that. And over time, I was able to learn all my lessons. I was able to come back. And now I think I do live in a good spot in the middle. But it is hard to find that middle. It really is. And so it's like walking a tightrope. You have to be very careful with your words to speak grace and to speak truth and not to fall off on either side. So it is possible to say the right thing the wrong way. And guess what? You no longer are saying the right thing. Now you are saying the wrong thing. So perhaps you know the verse in Ephesians 4 that says this. Ephesians 4:15 says, instead, we will speak the truth in love. Instead of what? Instead of telling lies, we speak the truth in love. And in doing so, we are growing in every way more and more like Christ, who is the head of his body, the church. So here you are. You are commanded to speak the truth in love. If you open your mouth and you speak truth, love must accompany it. This is what Christ would do. To speak the truth in love is to be like him. So when we speak like Christ, it says here, we grow the church. We build everyone up. And so we should. So I have always been somebody that cares a lot about the truth, but I have not always spoken in love. I have disobeyed what it says to do here. And I've felt the cost of that disobedience profoundly. So today, as I'm speaking, I want you to know I'm not speaking from ideas or theories. I am speaking from my own scars. So if you're like me, you know it hurts to not be able to say the truth that you want to feel like you shot yourself in the foot. You said the right thing the wrong way, and now you blew your leg off. You have disqualified yourself from having influence over someone because you said the right thing the wrong way. To me, in that moment, it feels suffocating. That's the word I use. So certainly, we need to be able to say what's true. The truth equips the church. And speaking the truth is Christ-like. But again, it's possible to say the truth in a very unloving way. It's possible to be harsh, to be impatient, to fail to demonstrate understanding and compassion. And in doing this, to disobey God. So we have to get this right, especially if we want our voice to be heard by others and used by God to help them grow. So my primary point is this. Please remember this, that we build up the church with speech that considers another, honors another, and establishes another. Truth, when it's done well, when love accompanies it, is a love offering. It is walking beside somebody and not in front of them. It is prioritizing gentleness over judgment. It is prioritizing dignity over exposure. So speaking the truth in love, to me, it has three steps. You must do three things. Love must be offered in the form of understanding, in the form of compassion, and then and only then can the truth be offered. The truth is never naked. It's never unadorned. It is always accompanied by love. So we'll unpack all three of these this morning. So point number one, it's this. If you don't yet understand someone, you should be very slow to correct them. So let's start by talking about the role of understanding when it comes to speaking the truth in love. And this is why understanding communicates love. Here's what I'm talking about. So I'll tell you a personal conviction I have when it comes to conversations like this. If I am aware of something wrong, some difficulty, some burden, some even sin in someone else's life, I feel obligated to say it. I will say it. I speak words of correction whenever they're necessary. And I never fail to offer the truth if I can help it. There's a reason for that. My opinion is that it is loving to say what I see and what I think. Now, obviously, discernment's needed. You can't just do this whenever you want. You have to wait for the right time to say what you want to say. You have to make sure it'll land well. You cannot just shoot from the hip. Don't just go crazy with telling people what you want to tell them. But here's my point. There is a cost to not saying it. The reason most people don't say it is because they fear that they will appear harsh to their listener. They fear that the truth is going to break the relationship. Well, here's the thing. It never does. If you do it right, truth can establish relationships. So speaking up is good. Here's what you should know. Speaking up is good because it relieves you. It satisfies the conscience. Usually, people know that they should say something, and then they chicken out, and they don't. And so instead of listening to your conscience, maybe you sweep it under the rug. I know I have. And now, because you didn't say anything, the problem grows in your head. The other person keeps looking worse. Your concern and your anxiety grow. There's more problems beyond that. And now the offense multiplies, and the offense lives in your head and your heart rent-free instead of coming out into the light. That's a major mistake. So when you stop talking to your brothers and sisters, the devil keeps talking to you. It's also loving to speak up for someone else's sake, not just your own. So I remember a woman in a reconciliation meeting, and she was in her 80s. And her friend came to her and said something that was very obviously true. It's just plainly true. And the woman who was receiving that, her first response was shock. She's like, whoa, what did you just say to me? But then it was gratitude. She ended up being very thankful. She had never heard what this woman wanted to say to her in 80 years of life. And she recognized the love in it. When she stopped and listened for just a moment, she thought about it and realized, okay, she's loving me right now. And she said, no one has loved me enough to tell me this. Thank you. So I'm encouraging you to speak for yourself, for another. But when you speak, you have to do it the right way. You cannot begin with dogmatic statements. You can't begin with absolute language. If the first words out of your mouth are you always or you never, wrong. That's the quickest way for someone else's ears to turn off and for the walls to go up. So instead, the best thing you can do is feels like language, at least to start. It feels like you don't care right now. It feels like you've done something hurtful to me. And what you're offering this other person, if you go to them, is not the assertion that what you saw or experienced is 100% right. You're offering perspective. That's what you should start with, perspective. Furthermore, you should assume misunderstanding. There is no safe assumption. You should turn over every rock that you can. So if you feel offended by someone else, the last thing you should do is nurse that grievance. You should not assume that the way you took it is the way that they gave it. Most of the time, what looks like offense to you is probably misunderstanding. So one of the best things you can do in this moment, if you're going to someone else, is to be really, really curious. You can say to this other person, well, this situation looks like this to me. How does it look to you? Do we see this the same way? And so this is what humility in giving the truth looks like. What you're trying to establish is just how correct your perspective is, right? And certainly there has to be some truth in it, right? There's some truth in what you think and feel. You are not crazy. But it is definitely possible to assume too much. So when you're offended, you should stop instantly. Stop yourself. And you need a bird's eye view in that moment of your own heart. Look down at your heart and you're like, okay, heart, yikes, that stung. That was a hurtful comment. But is it possible that I heard them wrong? And oh my goodness, let me think about that for just a moment. If that's true, that they didn't mean it that way, oh, maybe I don't have to be so offended. Maybe my offense is softening. And that can only happen if more information comes in. That's what you should be seeking to find. So again, let's anchor this in some scripture. Proverbs 18:17 says this. It says, the first to state his case sounds right until another comes along and cross-examines him. You want to bring truth to somebody? Well, let them cross-examine it a little bit. No one has all the pieces, so go slow. You need to go slow. Put some of your pieces on the table and let them put some of their pieces on the table. And again, don't assume too much about that. 2 Corinthians 13:1, Paul says, a matter is confirmed by two or three witnesses. And those two witnesses can be the two in reconciliation, the one going and the one hearing. A third could be a trusted mediator. If you need help in doing this, get help. The two witnesses can also look like two or three data points. So an event happened two or three times. A pattern is established, and it looks very clear to you, and that's what you're doing when you approach somebody. Hey, I've seen this two or three times. It feels really hard to ignore this. So the point is, put all the pieces together. You need two or three perspectives, not just your own. So as you go and you try to speak the truth in love, yeah, say your piece. You have some truth to say. But then you should wait. You should be very patient. You have a need to be understood. You want someone else to see in themselves what you see in them. You should want that. But they have an equally important need, a need you should not ignore. and that is to be rightly understood by you. So people fight and miscommunicate. I want you to hear this. People fight and miscommunicate because both of them, the person going and the person listening, are both trying to get their needs met in the same conversation. It doesn't work. So again, Proverbs 18:13, and I hope this hits you. This hits me when I hear it. Spouting off before listening to the facts is both shameful and foolish. And James said in James 1:19, understand this, my dear brothers and sisters, you must all be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to get angry. So the best way to get what you want in reconciliation is not to do it first. It's to give it to someone else first. So whether you're the speaker of truth or the listener, I would highly suggest this. Repeat back what you've heard the other person say. Be curious. Ask a lot of questions. If you don't understand their perspective, again, don't attempt to make any absolute statements or come to any absolute conclusions. Furthermore, what is going to get you into their perspective? Like, you have your own, but you need theirs. So what's going to get you into it? What's going to help you find more understanding of what they're thinking? Well, here it is. It's compassion. You have to love them well in that moment. So when we speak the truth, when any of you do, just speak a little bit. And really stay with the response of another. Say a little bit and let them say a lot. And when we honor their response, then and only then, when they've said what they want to say, okay, then add a little more. We don't give anyone, no one here should be giving both barrels right away. We do not overwhelm the other. So again, we build up the church with speech that considers another, honors another, and establishes another. Point number two, it's this. It's that compassionate speech considers two perspectives, not one. Let's go into some detail on this. So maybe you've heard the phrase before, no one cares what you know until they know that you care. That's true. So you have to consider how much of a relationship you have with somebody before you offer them anything, any correction at all. So maybe you remember last week, we were sharing that it can be hard to receive correction because it feels like a flaming arrow hits you right in the heart. It's painful to hear correction. It hurts to hear hard things. So you have to keep that in mind if you want to go to somebody. Even under the best of circumstances, someone may struggle to receive what it is that you want to say to them. So don't discount the difficulty that they may feel. You need to make room for it. So in my opinion, there's a preface to offer as you speak, a trigger warning of sorts. So if you aim to speak the truth in love, you have to offer love before you offer truth. So this especially applies to certain sensitive topics. If you want to talk with somebody about their marriage, you want to talk to them about parenting, finances, any issue in their character, things like that, well, you cannot launch into the conversation and go in through the front door. You can't just go off. You have to go in through the side door. And so these types of conversations, in my opinion, they need an explicit statement about love. Don't assume they feel loved by you as you go. So if you know that that conversation might be a sensitive one, or even if you know it's not, I think you should do this no matter what. It's saying something like this, acknowledging this at the outset. This is literally what I would say. Thank you for meeting with me. I want to talk to you about something that might be incredibly sensitive. I'm bringing this up because it's important to me, and I'm not saying I'm completely right about it. It's only my perspective. It's just how I feel right now. If you want to go to that next slide. Yeah. But I think there could be something hard to hear here. Something I'm going to tell you might be hard, and I am not trying to offend you on purpose. So if I say anything that's hard for you, I want you to tell me. I value our relationship, and I do not want to hurt it. So if anything I say hurts you, I want a timeout on my concern. I'm not trying to speak the truth to you anymore. Now I'm trying to care for your hurt. Because the truth is, you can't progress anywhere you want to in the conversation until you account for their resistance. Then you can go back. Then you can continue. And then I ask people, is that okay with you? Are you ready for that? Because sometimes people aren't. You gotta wait. So I would suggest you say something like that. Another conviction I have is this is exactly how Jesus would have a conversation. So even when trying to speak the truth, Jesus would emphasize love. So what would that look like? Well, let's put some pieces together. If Jesus was a servant, if he constantly humbled himself, well, how would he have a conversation? his whole tone of it would be, yes, I have something to say to you, but I want to talk with you. I don't want to talk at you. That should be us. So if you want to speak the truth in love, begin by saying just a little bit and let someone else react to it. When they're ready, you can add a little more. Romans 12:10 says this. It says, be devoted to one another in love. Honor one another above yourselves. This is the heart of speaking the truth in love. It's the attitude of honor. Honor is an attitude towards another person that prioritizes and elevates their needs above your needs. It's like saying, yes, I'm going to go to you, but it's not only about me, it's about you too. And when both people in the conversation can do that, when they're devoted to each other in love, watch out. It is mutual edification time. Both of you will build each other up. We need a church full of people who do that. So speaking the truth for you is all about you making your points, me saying to you what I think you need to hear. To be honest with you, I want you to hear this. There is no love in that. Love is not communicated through that. That feels like an agenda. That feels like conditional love, not agape love. It's like saying to someone else, the message received so often is, yep, I'm only going to be satisfied that you are sufficiently humble when you've completely let me run you over. I just want to plow you down. So maybe you remember last week that I said that there's this need to hold tension in these conversations sometimes. There's two perspectives and they're held in tension. And so it's possible that if you're offering something to someone else, that feels so tense to them that they snap. They have a bad reaction. They have a foolish response that they regret because they got overwhelmed. And so that tension, again, holding two perspectives in mind at once, we have to do our absolute best to reduce that tension, especially in a sensitive conversation. So what does that mean in plain English? How do you do this? It means you go to them, you say your piece, you put one piece on the table. And when you put that one piece on the table, or at least as you attempt to, you let yourself be interrupted. You let all their objections and difficulties to what you have to say come out. And if you have more pieces, they go on one at a time. You let the other person pick up your piece and examine it and ask any questions they want and describe what they see and all of that. You do not throw a fistful of things at them at the same time. So speaking the truth is good. It is right to pursue an agenda of truth. That is a loving thing. But the reason it feels like conditional love is because what can be received is, nope, I'm putting all my pieces on the table right now. Your pieces are not important to me. Truth is what I affirm. Truth is not what you affirm or what we affirm together. It is what I want right now. So when I think of this topic, I think of what Jesus said in Luke 15. Luke 15 is my favorite chapter in the Bible. And I want to tell you about this. This is the heart of Christ, I believe, in reconciliation. Where are we at? Luke 15:4. Jesus says this. He says, what man among you who has 100 sheep and loses one of them does not leave the 99 in the pasture and go after the one that is lost until he finds it? So the reason you're going to them at all, yes, it was because you're offended. Your concern maybe is that, well, I've been hurt or someone else has been hurt, someone else has been offended. You're going to them because of you. That's true. But that should not be your only motivation at all. The larger portion of your motivation should be your concern for them, not for yourself. What you're saying is, what you're saying to them through your actions, your words, all of that, yes, your sin and your blind spot, of course it affects me. That's true. And the effect it has on me is the reason I'm coming to you at all. But it's not the only reason I'm coming to you. My love for you is compelling me as well. I love you. That's why I'm coming. So if you're acting like Christ in the act of going, and in the act of pursuing the conversation, that is like going after one sheep that left the sheepfold, leaving the 99 and going for the one. So when you do all this work, think about this. It's hard work to do this, to speak the truth in love. When you do all this work to pursue this person, pursue the heart of that person, when you do all that work to go and track them down, what you're not saying to them, what I hope none of you are saying to them is, yep, I came all this way to find you and tell you how your sin hurt me. They're going to feel pretty offended at that. You're going to them in order to tell them, I came all this way to tell you how I'm concerned that your sin is hurting you. Your sin is putting you out of fellowship, not with me, but with everyone else. I care about you. And I'm having this conversation with you because I see that you're outside in a dangerous place. I want to bring you back. So when you're offering correction, you are presenting the truth. But if you present it properly, you're presenting it in a way that's going to draw out the heart. You're casting a net for the pain of someone else. So if you're acting like Jesus in a conversation, if you're truly speaking the truth in love, you're not putting your burden on their shoulders. You're taking their burden and putting it on your shoulders. You're taking them, putting them on your shoulders and carrying them back. So again, I want you to do this. I want to do this. I want to do this every time I mess up in it. To continue to build up the church with speech that considers another, honors another, and establishes another. Point number three, it's that truth and reconciliation establishes the heart of another. So let's talk about truth. We've talked about understanding. We've talked about compassion. It's time to talk about truth. I'm a firm believer in absolute truth. I love the truth. The truth is the truth. It doesn't care how you feel about it. That is true. But in reconciliation, it can be arrived at together. I want you to hear that. It can be arrived at together. Now, maybe that doesn't make any sense to you. I want to explain that. I'll give you an example, a story. I know a man who once told a story about visiting a modern building, a performing arts center. And this building, it was intentionally designed with a lot of postmodern chaos. It has stairways that go to nowhere. It has pillars with no purpose, doors that open into walls, right? Just a lot of silly things in it. And so the man who was visiting, he was asked what he thought, and he famously replied, "Okay, yeah, sure, but I bet they wouldn't do that with the foundation." So the world we live in can play a lot of games with structure, with meaning, with design, with all types of things of that nature. And people try to play games with the truth as well. But ultimately, reality won't allow it. A house with a postmodern foundation collapses, right? You can have a doorway that goes to stairs or something, or a wall, or whatever you want, that's fine. But you build a foundation on a shaky plane, it's going to collapse. And it's the same. A worldview without truth, or a church without truth, collapses under its own weight. So is there such a thing as absolute truth? Yeah, you better believe it. Of course there is. And maybe you know, if you've ever studied apologetics, if you've ever studied theology, truth matters a lot. And you live in a world where people deny the existence of God. And by denying the existence of God, they deny all kind of absolute truth. And there are people who cannot say out there, people that don't believe in God, they can't say that anything is absolutely wrong. They cannot appeal to any higher authority than themselves. And a worldview without truth, I want you to hear this, by its own admission, cannot justify its own existence. Doesn't make any sense. So if you're listening to me and you're hearing me say that truth can be arrived at together, I am not saying that truth is relative. Truth is truth. We can't put your truth and my truth together and have both of us be right. It doesn't work. That's not true. But here's the thing. What happens with reconciliation a lot of times is that no one can quite remember what happened, right? It's hard to recall the actual facts of something going on when it feels sensitive, when you're highly emotional, when it's a shock to you, all of that. It's hard to recall historical, actual reality. But what everyone is very aware of, especially if you're hurt, is your emotional reality. You don't remember what happened all the way, but you remember how you feel. Of course you do. So a situation happened. It absolutely happened. But you have your experience of the thing, and maybe I have mine. I don't remember all the facts. But again, I remember what it felt like. So what I believe, and I want you to hear this, it is usually fruitless. It is borderline impossible to litigate situations like that. You definitely did this. No, I didn't. Yes, you did. All that. It's impossible to go back and say what happened with complete certainty. I mean, good luck. Because two people remembering it are human, and they're very often mistaken. So it'd be really easy to come with an accusation in hand. It'd be really easy to come with your preferred narrative about a situation. But don't be surprised if you find that someone else has a completely different narrative about that situation. They're not lying to you, I promise you. Usually they are not confused. What they're telling you is how they actually received what happened. And so it's the rare person in my experience in a loving church that's humble, humble Christian, usually is completely sincere. But I'll tell you what, when you get to this point, if you get this far in reconciliation, it can feel baffling, confusing, hurtful, upsetting that they don't remember it like you do. But my advice to you is don't press too hard on that. Not without two or three witnesses, at least. To speak the truth in love, what you're really trying to do is make it make sense. Your goal in that conversation should not be to be right. It should be to understand more. It's to be able to see that, yes, this person has a good heart. Maybe they're weak, but they're humble. They're good. So before you go and have the conversation, it might be really easy to assume some of their motivation. But it's a mistake to assign too much of something to someone else before you talk to them. The best thing you can do is to believe what this other person is saying to you. And most of us, again, we're completely sincere and humble in this. But again, it can be really hard. It can be hard if they recall a situation differently than you do. So speaking the truth in love can mean, ultimately, that you can let them have a difference in interpretation. That's one of the definitions of empathy. I don't know if you know that. Empathy is allowing difference in others. We don't have to be identical for us to be unified. So it's possible that when giving and receiving the truth, you want your narrative to win. Of course, I usually want mine to win. But I want to remind you of this. 1 Corinthians 13:5, Paul says, love does not demand its own way. So your goal as you speak the truth is to love them well by understanding them. And what you're saying, this is the attitude here. It's okay, if I line up everything I know about this person, everything about their history, everything about their family, their baggage, their triggers, their experience, their personality, all of that, everything together in this package, well, yep, it makes total sense how they came to that conclusion. Okay. It doesn't automatically mean they're right. You should still work to inform them if they need some information from you. But okay, it makes sense. I get it. Now, their behavior or attitudes, they may still affect you quite a bit, and you should absolutely inform them of that effect. But if it makes sense, now it's time to believe the best. A lot of times that hurts. That's hard to do. So when people feel heard, when you do this for somebody, yep, I believe the best about you, and okay, there's mistake here, there's weakness here, we've now come to a good understanding, all of that. When people feel heard by you as you go and you speak the truth in love, and they feel like they have a voice with you, they can speak up and you're listening, your ears are on, not just theirs. When they feel like you understand them and what they think and the way that they think, well, the walls come down, the ears turn on. So here's what's usually true. If you're going to them, you're not the only one who sees whatever that is in them. Others have seen it too, almost certainly. Others are aware of that issue. Other people may have spoken up, they may not have. Who knows? Maybe you're the first. Maybe it's like that woman in her 80s. But if you want to speak the truth in love, and if you want the truth to grow in someone else, if you want to influence their perspective in any way, they need affirmation of their perspective before you get affirmation of yours. It's about them first. What they need from you is a receipt of, you're not crazy, I get it. It makes sense how you came to the conclusion you came to. Then and only then are they ready to hear what you have to say. So when someone feels like you understand them, and you love them, and you respect them, and all of that, and you've done your job to go to them and describe what you see and all of that, in my opinion, one of two things are going to happen. Or both of these things are going to happen. They're now going to ask you what's true, or they're going to tell you what's true. And if they tell you what's true when you didn't think that they knew that the whole time, now you're really going to be confused. So, maybe they get to a place of truth with you, with your help, without your help, who knows? But if you're patient, that patience is going to pay off. It is hard to sit there and want to say 5 things to somebody, or 10 things to somebody, or even 1 thing to somebody. And you feel like, man, I only get to say this much of what I want to say, and I have a lot to say. It can feel like it takes forever to work through their resistance to your thoughts. But again, if you say a little bit and you let them respond a lot, actually, you may find that the 5 things you're concerned about or this much concern you have, just hearing the response is going to shrink that to what it should be, just a little bit. 5 concerns can melt into 2 or 1 based on their commentary. So you can put all your pieces on the table. But the only ones that get to stay there are the ones that survive the scrutiny of their response. And they can put some pieces on the table, but the only ones that they get to leave there are the ones that survive your response. And so together, you can arrive at a truth that is better than any one interpretation, that considers two or three interpretations, and that establishes good mutual trust and a good heart on both sides. Consider this, more Proverbs. Proverbs 25:15, it says, "Through patience, a ruler can be persuaded, and a gentle tongue can break a bone." So if you listen more than you speak, you will find inevitably that your patience rewards you. The other person will help you to see which of your concerns are truly valid and which aren't. And when the time comes, you only need to add a few ounces of truth, not several pounds. You don't need to hammer them with the truth. The truth does not need to be a sledgehammer in that moment. It just needs to be a scalpel. You're just cutting a little bit out. You're not smashing them. Let me read you one more proverb, and we'll be done. It's this, Proverbs 25:11, "A word fitly spoken, when you speak the truth in love, it is like apples of gold in settings of silver." So this setting of silver, this silver frame that perfectly places your golden apple of truth, this is the understanding that you can offer somebody else. This is the compassion that you can offer somebody else. The silver setting is the reason you can offer a golden apple. So let me just talk to all of you for a moment. I know that there are some truth tellers in this room. I don't know if you're like me. Maybe you want to say something, you don't know how. Well, golden fruit should absolutely be offered so that many in the church can grow and receive wisdom from you. You have an integral part to play. If you have some truth to say, I guarantee you there's some truth in it. And there's a lot of fear about, man, should I speak up or not? But again, if you go with love, if you do some of the things I'm offering you today, love is the frame by which you can give gold to another. So if you're more direct like me, even blunt, well, you may need to learn to season your speech with salt. But if you're a little more reserved, maybe you need to learn not to fear a response or to speak up more. But no matter where you fall on the spectrum, and everyone is a little different, the church needs all of us to speak the truth in love. So again, my prayer for you, I've prayed it twice. I prayed it all week, as long as I've been writing this, thinking about this. I've prayed that I've helped all of you to find your voice, and that all of us can be equipped to speak to someone else in this church, to speak the truth in love. So if you know the pain of this, the pain of disobedience, of not speaking the truth in love, either of failing to offer love or failing to speak at all, well, I pray you obey if you need to. And maybe there's some conversations that do need to happen this week. I pray you don't delay that. So if you do need to speak this week, whether you need to speak it or maybe receive it, I hope you do. Some people here need to repair a relationship or extend a relationship. Maybe you don't need to offer rebuke. Maybe you just need to offer honesty. I hope you do. I hope that all of us together can ask the Lord for courage, for gentleness, and for timing. So you can think about what I've said. You can talk to the person next to you. Pray about these things. Take some notes. And we'll have the band up here in just a minute.